Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Ian Stone here on Love Sport Radio, sitting opposite Mr. Patrick Barkley. Good afternoon, Patrick.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I hope you're well.
I'm very well.
You're
thanks.
Doing all right.
There's
okay.
a lot
going around. Yeah, there's
Yeah,
there's a lot going around. We're looking at two TV screens. One has got England at 37 for naught in the fourth and final test against South Africa. The other one has got lots of rather bleak reportage about the coronavirus in China, which is now sort of broken out. 10 cities have been closed down. I went to Chinatown the other day. I genuinely was a little bit concerned.
I mean,
what can you do? Interesting enough, by the way, you know, SARS was the last big outbreak.
Yes.
More people were killed by falling downstairs than SARS, all right, in that period. So I think we have to get some perspective.
Yes, quite.
That's the point.
I do, yes, these things. It's because this is new. And therefore unpredictable that it's such a big story.
I must admit,
at this moment, the only thing that worries me slightly is that people arriving from Wuhan. Going to be quizzed. Well, I don't think quizzing's going to help, is it?
Who won the World Cup in 1934? not that sort of quiz. Oh, right, okay.
Right.
Was it France?
In 1934. Oh, I don't know. Even my time.
I believe it might have been Italy. It was one of those two.
Italy won it in 34.
It was Italy. Mark's told me, our producer
asked me
told
who
me.
The manager was.
It was
Vittorio Pozzo, because I had a discussion about this yesterday.
Vittorio Pozzo, now...
He was a Man United fan, if you're looking for a way into the next...
We'll certainly talk about that. Right. But Vittorio Pozzo is quite a famous name. He's one of those guys like Catenaccio, these sort of words that you hear.
Yep.
Now, what was it about Vittorio Pozzo? Was he sort of quite...
He won two World Cups, but... What do you mean?
Is he like a Herbert Chapman? Is he sort of revolutionary in the way that he played the game?
Yeah, I think so. But as I say, the one thing I know about him was that he was a Man United fan. And he came to Manchester to improve his English and became friendly with the Man United players at that time, who had just stopped being Newton Heath, as every schoolboy knows.
That's a while ago.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
And the rest is history, although that history is being rewritten right now with their poor performances. Even though they're fifth, by the way, Manchester United, let's not get carried away. They are 6 points.
It's not an acute danger of relegation, is it?
No, it is.
Although they looked like a relegation side.
They did the other day. They were absolutely awful. And we will certainly talk about Manchester United. There's all sorts of stories. There's one in the Daily Mail I want to get into as well.
Yes.
About the sort of reporting that is happening now. But you know what? We can get to that. Man United, by the way, play Tranmere Rovers on Sunday in the FA Cup.
And if the FA Cup needed a boost, what a boost that is. I mean, everyone will be watching that game. Everyone will be getting out of their Tranmere Rovers scarves, I would suspect, as well.
If I had a Tranmere Rovers scarf, I would be getting it out. I mean, what I would say, I've looked at the ties. It's not a great FA Cup fourth round draw.
No.
I don't think. There's a lot of ties that are fairly predictable.
Interesting without being gripping, but this one...
It's
just got very gripping indeed.
It's potential, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And what, of course, most fans want, not incidentally, but I would have thought, the broadcasters, but what most fans want is a Tranmere victory.
Yes.
The broadcasters want Manchester United to win because they do consistently pull in the biggest audiences.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I mean, whenever people say, it's always Man United on the telly, well, that's because they get more people watching them than anyone else.
We're quite lucky in this country that the Premier League's been run in such a way that Man United don't commandeer the revenue that their figures in sort of crass commercial terms merit in the way that Barcelona and Real Madrid do in Spain.
Yes,
I think the Premier League have got to be congratulated for that, particularly Scudamo, the late chief executive, because
should we do a collection for him again and get some more money for him, if we can give him another £250,000 from each of us, because he wasn't earning enough, was
poor
he
lad.
Let's be fair,
poor lad. Yeah.
Didn't you think, I mean, I remember that story. I sat in here when I was doing breakfast and I remember that story and I think Does he really need another £5 million? I know they've all earned loads of money.
He didn't ask for it, but I just think that, I'll tell you who did ask for it, the idiots, owners of the Premier League, who suggested it. I mean, that was to them, sticking in £500,000 of money that isn't theirs anyway is their idea of a whip round. You know, for you and me, it's a fiver to go for a pint, you know?
Well, yeah, but also, by the way, that is our money. That we're the ones who pay for that stuff,
precisely,
isn't it?
Precisely.
I mean, we pay... I mean, listen,
they're
spending
money that isn't their own. I suppose that's why they became billionaires.
I guess. Anyway, in this particular this particular case, you're right. The Premier League are to be congratulated for doling the money out evenly.
Evenly, yeah.
Although, of course, Man United, the more TV games you get, the more... But that's the TV companies,
but it's marginal.
It?
It's marginal compared with the weighting that you get in other countries, not Germany, but most other countries, in favour of the big clubs.
Which is why our Premier League, ultra-competitive, has a team 16 points clear with one game in hand at the moment, all right?
Absolutely.
I'm just being facetious
but
here.
But it's also a reason why Leicester City won the Premier League, you know, that they were able to build a good enough squad to make that leap.
That's a fair point. And Yes, that is to be lauded, I suppose. That sort
of
stuff.
Because they were smarter at buying. I'm sorry that everything seems to come back to Manchester United, but Leicester City were 100 times smarter at buying than Manchester United have been for as long as anybody can remember.
I mean, the fact they got Mahrez and Kante for essentially no money. I mean, was it Mahrez playing in the eighth tier or something, and Kante...
United paint by numbers and by Pogba, for goodness sake.
I mean,
suicide note.
This is the interesting thing, because we're also going to talk about Martial was 60 million quid.
One foot.
You know what? Okay, we can get into that, but I just want to... On the opposite end of that, Liverpool, their recruitment. I mean, everyone goes on about Liverpool's net spend. Mm. Now, obviously, I'm not saying they got lucky, but they only spent £8.5 million on Coutinho, right? And they ended up selling him for £130 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And with that money, they bought Virgil van Dijk and Alisson.
Yes.
And they are basically, because Alisson was the reason they were still in that game last night. He made a couple of great saves.
Correct.
And Van Dijk, of course, is the best centre-half in the world and is making Joe Gomez
arguably
the best
player in the world, yeah.
Certainly up there. But
Joe Gomez is learning, will eventually be the best, or as near as damn it, the best centre-half in the world, because he's learning next to the perfect person. And he's the basic ability of Joe Gomez is these two could end up as good as, if not better, than Hansen and Lawrenson.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I actually think that Joe Gomez might be a better player than Virgil van Dijk. I think he might be more mobile.
He's stronger. He's more, I hesitate to use the word honest, but he's more up front. He doesn't pass on difficult challenges the way Virgil does sometimes.
Yeah.
Basically, if it's there to be won, he'll go in with his heart and soul.
They might never lose again, Liverpool.
I think, well, yeah.
And
I think they will lose. I think they will lose before the end of the season. And I'll tell you why. Because I think they'll win the league with six games to play. And the celebration when they do win the league will be such that I think they'll be very vulnerable in that last six games.
Well, it was interesting because Arsene Wenger talked about the invincible season.
And I don't
think
they give a damn about going through this. I bet there's not a single Liverpool player who could care less whether they go through, or Klopp, who could care less whether they go through the whole season unbeaten.
Well, that's the point. I remember
they just want to win the league. It's simple as that.
Amy Lawrence, who is, you would know, Amy,
yeah, very good writer
and good friend of mine.
Very good writer.
And and she wrote a book about the Invincibles.
Yep.
And one of the things they were talking about was the fact that when they won the title, after that, it was very difficult to get motivated for the last four or five games.
Absolutely.
Because, and Thierry Henry talks about this, Arsene Wenger said to them, right, now you can become invincible. And it was almost an alien concept. Mm. Like, what do you mean?
Mm.
Obviously, after it happened, and they went the last four or five games unbeaten and they got there, the players went, okay. But at the time, it's all very much on the next game, the next game, the next game. And if there's essentially nothing riding on the next game besides a record...
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult for motivation.
Yeah.
Having said that, Liverpool, they are special at the moment. I've
not seen any team as and forget the statistics, with the air of invincibility that this team has. Not since the, you know, Shankly, post Shankly, 78-9 season, for example. When they actually lost some games, but they had an air of invincibility.
Liverpool's last four league games this season, by the way, are Burnley, Arsenal, Chelsea and Newcastle. I mean, look, you can lose any of them. Let's be fair. We've seen the way Newcastle are beating Chelsea and then getting a ridiculous draw in the week against Everton with two goals in injury time.
Yeah.
So games are losable, whatever. And especially when you've won the title and you've taken your foot off the gas. Plus, you'd also imagine that if Liverpool do win the title by mid to late March, why would they not play their reserves and give their players a rest to play in the Champions League, the later stages of the Champions
Which
League?
We are on the assumption that they're still in it. I mean, they're defending the damn thing. I mean, it's I think
phenomenal,
all this invincible talk, it's the kind of thing that newspaper reporters seem to be alone in the world in being interested in.
Arsenal fans are proud of that team. Uh-huh. We're proud of that team. I was at the game at Old Trafford when Manchester United took it off us. Well, Mike Riley took it off us, in fact.
Were Arsenal better that season or the season before?
Oh.
In my opinion.
The season before, when they went unbeaten away from home.
Yeah.
That was an unbelievable season as well. Uh-huh. You know what? You sort of tend to think of that team around that era, the 2-3 years when it was Bergkamp and Henri and Pires.
Yeah.
And the invincible, it's a thing that we can sing.
Yeah.
It's sort of bragging rights in a sense, in the same way that Chelsea fans will sing, "You'll never be champions of Europe" and all the rest of it. Mm. Possibly true.
Yeah. What do Arsenal fans actually sing? "We're as good as Preston."
We're as good as Preston North End, 1888 to 1889. It doesn't scan that well, to be totally honest with you. Anyway, we will talk more about whether they will go unbeaten for the season. Can they win the Champions League and FA Cup? We'll talk about Manchester United after the break. West Ham fans also, by the way, are furious after their 4-1 defeat to Leicester City. I think they've got a case, to be honest with you. They're taken out of a grand old ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, let's be fair. Going to an away game at Upton Park was never a safe experience for Arsenal fans.
Wasn't it?
When I was about 14, I had a couple of scarves nicked. Uh-huh. Remember when you used to wear scarves around your arms, right?
Yes,
you had a scarf
around
your neck and one around each arm. And I got shoved up against the wall by four West Ham toughs,
I think
they used to say. But
at least they untied the scarf before they went away with it. They didn't carry you away.
They didn't just yank it off my arm. No, they said...
Oh, that's gentlemanly. That's old school.
It was old school hooliganism, yes. It was a bit of a dangerous place to go, but grand atmosphere, which has never been replicated at the London Stadium, because the London Stadium is an athletic stadium, and I've seen athletics in it, and it's brilliant, but it ain't a football stadium.
No, it certainly isn't, and I had the privilege of going to a sort of match day experience. We didn't actually go to the match, but we were... I was working with a TV crew from Thailand who were making a documentary around there, and we were denied access to the ground, quite rightly under Premier League regulations. And I said, "But don't worry, that the story isn't inside the ground. The story is the fans hate the place."
Yeah.
And we must have interviewed every single of the 54,000 who were there,
and
not one doesn't hate it.
Yeah.
Not just not like it very much, hates it.
West Ham fans, if you think you've been sold a pup, and I think you probably have by your owners, get in touch, 0208 70 25 58 or at Love Sport Radio. We'll talk about West Ham, and we'll also talk a little bit about the transfers as well after the break.
Love Sport.
You know, I saw a beggar, a guy give a pound to a beggar outside the station near me yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy gave the money to the beggar, gave him a pound, and he says to him, "Spend it wisely." Do you not think that's a bit odd? It's a bit odd, isn't it? Like the beggar was going to go, "Well, I was going to spend it on crap. Now I won't now. I'll spend it on a high-energy juice drink."
I assume it was a bad attempt at a joke.
Do you know what? It weirded me out, if
because
I'm totally
honest with
you.
What it might have been was self-deprecating. You know, I know it's only a quid.
You're being very forgiving here.
I'm being Christian.
Oh, right, okay.
Although other religions are available.
As you know, sitting here in front of you. But yes.
Judeo-Christian.
And that's fair enough. I just found it a little odd, that's all. Just give him the money and just leave him be. He can spend it on what he wants. It's now his money. Like, he'd have to come back, you know, if he said, "Look, spend it wisely." You go, "Okay, I'll show you the receipt later on for the, you know, I've joined a gym. Thank you."
Also, what is wisely? Suppose he goes out, he buys a lottery ticket and he wins 10 million. That's wise, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's a very good point. What should he spend it on? 0208 70 20 558. Because he's out there regularly. If you tell me, I'll tell him what he should wisely spend the money on.
Can you get a lottery ticket for a quid?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. I have done a number of occasions. Mm. Never, not even a tenner. Nothing. Anyway, let's talk about, well, it's Manchester United, really. Let's have a chat with James Robson, the Manchester football correspondent for the Evening Standard. Good afternoon, James.
How you doing?
Hi, James.
All right.
Hello.
I mean, do you ever get sick of talking about Manchester United, by the way? Because it's not that we do. It's not that we do, because it is an endlessly fascinating subject. But, my God, the travails at the moment. I mean, it's a little bit convoluted, isn't it? They can't get any deals over the line.
Well, look, in answer to your question, no, I don't get sick of talking about them. Because, as you say, there is always another story, isn't it? You've got to say, United, it is the gift that keeps on giving. Yep. Whether it's United in crisis, in triumph, even in mediocrity, it's the biggest story in town. So, no, I don't get bored of talking about it or writing about it.
No. And thank you for telling us that, so we can now continue. Jude Bellingham, 16 years old, I believe, from Birmingham City. Man United are talking about 30 million quid. I haven't seen this kid, I've got to be honest with you. Have you seen him, Paddy?
Yeah, well, I've seen him on... just clips and so on, but you don't know who the clips are made by. You know, it might be made by his agent or something.
Everyone's got a good video.
I've never seen a video issued by an agent of a player missing own goals or going out and getting drunk or anything.
Well, this is the point, James. Do you think he's worth 30 million? Does this smack of desperation?
I can't say whether or not he's worth 30 million, because I've got to say that Birmingham aren't really on my radar. I would say that if he's 60 years old and he's playing first team football, that sounds like a pretty special talent. Mm. In terms of the £30 million, well, that is an awful lot of money. But if he's that good that he's already making an impression at this age, then this is kind of where football's going, that you've got to find those real gems when they're that young. I mean, it's amazing that you talk about a 16-year-old, that you've got to put in the money to maybe get these players before they're actually out of your reach. Look at the problems United are having right now, signing established players. So maybe it is a case you've got to throw crazy money at kids to make sure that you can get a hold of them at any point.
Yeah, I'm actually just looking at a video, like YouTube clips of him. He obviously looks like a talent, and he looks older than 16 years old as well. He's got a bit of Rooney about him. Well, we'll see how that goes. At the other end of the scale, they've also been linked, Manchester United, with Carlos Tevez, who's 36 in 12 days' time.
Yes, I saw that link as well. I'd be pretty amazed if that came off. Now, I've been amazed in the past, so you know, you never say never in this business. But certainly given the way that he left United, given the welcome to Manchester, given the fact that he became an absolute legend, I think he also, didn't he hold up a fairly tasteless banner regarding Sir Alex Ferguson at one point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would be amazed if he came back to Old Trafford.
Although I'd like to see the banner, "Welcome to Stretford."
Well, yes, quite. I mean, why is it with their negotiating? They can't. Bruno Fernandes, this one's been going on for weeks. He stomped off after their defeat the other day. He obviously wants to come to Manchester United, and they can't agree a fee. Who's doing this negotiating, and why is it taking so long?
Well, the negotiations are done by a man called Matt Judge at United. And in terms of why it's not working out, everything about the Bruno Fernandes deal is odd. Look, United were interested in him in the summer, but they didn't buy him. They knew going into January that they were desperate for midfielders, absolutely desperate, knew he was available again, and didn't have this set up for January 1st. Midway through the window, they finally decided, oh, actually, we are interested in this guy. We were interested in all that time ago. Yeah. And then find out that his price is more than they think he's worth. One that I look at and I think, were they only interested because they thought they could get him at a bargain, and they're not interested if they've got to pay big money for him? If that's the case, then they shouldn't be interested at all. If they think he's a £55 million player who can have a transformative effect on them, then they shouldn't be getting involved in any negotiations anyway.
No.
If they're only interested in because he's a bargain, then something is very wrong.
It does feel that way. James, listen, the lines are a little bit ropey, so we're going to let you go. Thanks for joining us, though. It's James Robson, Manchester football correspondent for the Evening Standard. I mean, Fred was 50 million quid, wasn't he? And I mean, although he's shown signs the last few games of being a half decent player, he's not at the level, as James said, the word he used was transformative, which is what they need.
Absolutely. They need the player that they mistakenly thought that Pogba was. You know, that, as you say, a transformative player. The player that, in a different way, Rashford recently has shown signs of becoming.
Yeah.
The kind of player you say, well, we're all right because he's on the park, you know?
Yeah.
So, the Bruno Fernandes thing is extraordinary, particularly in terms of the disparity between what United...
The valuations.
Yeah. I mean, that's worrying because it sounds as if people are playing at it, you know?
Well, this is exactly what James is saying. Yeah. Is he a bargain?
I thought James talked a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about that. They were talking about the team that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer put out against Burnley contained players that four different managers had bought and a couple who'd come through the academy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not impossible that you can link them together. But if you compare that with, say, Manchester City or Liverpool particularly, but even Man City, you know who the only players that Pep Guardiola didn't buy? David Silva, Sergio Aguero, Fernandinho and Jesus, right? These are four world-class footballers.
Yes.
They should be able to fit into whatever system.
Yes.
Liverpool, right now, I think apart from Adam Lallana, everyone in that squad has been bought by Jurgen Klopp. You see the difference.
You can also see what they've been bought for, can't you?
Well,
fullback wingers, wing backs in a fullback four, which is on the face of it shouldn't be possible. All of Liverpool's team look as if they've not only been placed in the slots that they occupy, but that they've been honed into the best. Well, we don't need to speculate. You just look at the league table to see that they are the best in the position.
They are doing as well as they could.
As well as they possibly can. Manchester United, people say they're bad buys, but what would Lindelof... Suppose Lindelof had gone to Liverpool instead of Man United.
And played next to Virgil van Dijk.
Yes.
He would look like a player.
Would now be saying he looks like a fantastic player.
Yeah, he would. Now, the thing about Manchester United, you were talking about... I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but you know what? Not ridiculous, but the soul of Manchester United, right? Now, football fans, and I like the fact that you talk in this way because football fans talk this way, but journalists quite often, they don't really talk about this stuff, do they?
I don't know about that, but what I mean by soul, I'll make it in a simple comparison. How many fans have Manchester United got in the world? They themselves estimate 1 billion.
Yeah.
Now, we all know that's nonsense or a very poor definition of the word fan.
They couldn't fill the stadium the other day, could they? Even with all their billion
fans.
They
could empty it.
Empty, all right, but go on.
If you slice that in a tenth...
659 million is what they say here, but go on.
Yeah, but no, that's been revised.
All right,
now, I checked it. That was a 2012 valuation.
Okay, so...
Now being revised by the same company hired by United, by the way. But even say you divide it in 10 and you say there's 100 million. Okay, 50 quid each. Now that's the cost of a ticket to a match. Never mind the cost of getting there, transport.
Yeah.
Never mind the cost of subsistence or a program or taking your child or anything like that.
Yeah.
50 quid. That is all it would take for each of those fans to buy the club. That'd give you £5 billion. Now, on top of that, the Red Knights, you know, people like Lord O'Neill and so on, would probably chip in a billion as minority. You would have £5 billion.
Yeah.
And I know this is a fairy tale, but £5 billion, £3.5 billion would buy out the Glazers. £500 million to pay off their debts or the debts they've landed United with, and £3 million to give them a profit on their investment, a 100% profit.
Yeah.
You then have £1.5 billion left over. The £100 million will buy you Pochettino and his staff, six assistants, all on 5 years contracts. You then have £1.4 billion to buy the 8 best players in the world in their positions. You then add this 8 half decent players in the United squad. I make it eight if you're being charitable, including Lindelof and James. You've got eight good, worthwhile players in that squad.
In the squad.
Yes. I certainly wouldn't put it any higher
all
than
right.
that.
All right. So,
and
so
that way, that you solve all Manchester United problems, and it costs each fan 50 quid. The only problem with it is it's not going to happen in a million years.
No.
Even though that model is proved at Barcelona. Barcelona is a club with a soul. What's Man United?
And in Germany, so look at Germany.
Any club in Germany.
They're all owned by, 51% by fans.
So the model works, and it works in countries that are 1.5 hours from here. But why do British fans not put their hands, or worldwide fans not put their hands in the pockets for Man United? So what the question I'm asking, a rhetorical question, is have not Manchester United not got the club the fans deserve?
Well, I mean, it's also, I suppose, a question about the Premier League as well and the ownership of clubs. I mean, Arsenal, I was sat here before with Kelvin and he was asking me about Arsenal as well. You know, we have Stan Kroenke, an owner.
Three of the biggest clubs, Arsenal, Newcastle, Manchester United, are owned by people whose ambitions do not match those of the audience.
No. And let's be fair, Liverpool had a lot of problems before John Henry turned up. They had Hicks and Gillette. And that was...
Likewise, that didn't work out. Liverpool are happy now. Guess what? They're top of the league because they've got owners who know their one part of their anatomy from the other.
All right. So you think, first of all, the ownership is contributing to this lack of soul of the club. Mm. And you could say the same
about Arsenal.
And you could say the same about Arsenal as well. And you could definitely say the same about Newcastle.
Definitely. I just feel that if you're all through English football, the lack of appetite for fan ownership. I know there are loads of people who've worked out figures that say it can't work at a top level. Yes, you can have your Exeter. Yes, you can have my little club, Dundee, was fan-owned for a while. It's not anymore, but it was. And it can work at a small scale, and it can't work at a big scale. That's what we're told. Well, how do you explain Barcelona? How do you explain Bayern Munich?
But it was set up that way. Listen, Man United fans, give us a call. 0208 70 20 558. Have you got a spare 50 quid?
No. Every single one that gets in will say nonsense. And you know why? Not because it is nonsense, but because it'll cost them 50 quid. Same price as a match ticket.
Get in touch. Now, after the little break, we're going to go in the memory bank. Paddy Barclay's Bank of Football Memories.
This is Love Sport.
Ian Stone, Patrick Barclay here until 3 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Thank you very, very much for joining us here on Love Sport Radio. Now, there was a story this week, David Moyes. Possibly trying to divert from the fact that his team got absolutely schmeiced at Leicester the other day, mentioned about the League Cup overhaul, suggesting that Scottish clubs maybe would join it to make it a slightly more sort of UK-wide competition. Let's have a chat with Andrew Dixon, freelance sports journalist and producer working for Sky Sports News and Glasgow Rangers. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Andrew.
Good, doing fine, thank you. What do you think of this idea, Andrew, first of all? The English League Cup then opening up to Scottish teams. I mean, why not? If Celtic and Rangers are going to be in it, I mean, I think those games would be fascinating whoever they played.
Yeah, I agree with that part of it. I've got to say, fair play to David Moyes for recycling what is an old idea and gets regurgitated every few years, that being the idea of the Old Firm joining the Premier League. We all know that's probably never going to happen. The Premier League doesn't need the Old Firm as big as Celtic and Rangers are. One other idea, as David Moyes has brought up during the week, is this idea of bringing in Scottish clubs into the League Cup. Now, if I'm being totally honest about it, I can't help but feel that he's being polite and respectful to the other clubs out with the Old Firm, because I don't think the prospect of Manchester City going to play the likes of Livingston or St Johnstone is going to be particularly appealing to the likes of Pep Guardiola, who's already complaining about having too many games. Jurgen Klopp's doing the same. From that perspective, games against Rangers and Celtic, going to Ibrox or going to Celtic Park and playing games there. Of course, that's attractive because both of those clubs are certainly big, big clubs, and I think are perhaps underestimated a little bit at times by people away from Scottish football. But the prospect of going to, as I say, Livingston, St Johnstone, Hamilton Academical, clubs that only pull in 2,000 or 3,000 fans for their home games, which, you know, clubs in League Two pull in more fans than that generally, that's not massively attractive. So, you know, something in the middle, maybe not necessarily just the Old Firm, but also not all of the Scottish Premiership, you know, so maybe like the top six, the teams that are above the split when that happens, maybe bring them in. That might be more attractive because you have clubs like Hearts and Aberdeen and Hibernian are decent clubs, decent sized clubs, and would imagine be slightly more competitive.
Andrew, you didn't mention Dundee, by the way. I should point that out. No, we're sitting here with Paddy Bartley.
Sorry, Paddy. They're a league down at the moment.
Absolutely scandalous omission. But to omit these Champions League semi-finalists like Dundee. But no, I can understand why Andrew left us out of that elite group. But it's interesting, you know, the fantasy of it is great. I mean, Hearts against Manchester City, even though Hearts' ground only holds 21,000, would draw 60,000 because they could switch it to Murrayfield. It would be a real event.
But isn't the point of this? I mean,
it's fantasy.
It is fantasy. I mean, listen, we've all talked in the past about Celtic and Rangers joining the Premier League, as you said. And I remember Sammy Nelson.
They'd have to join a bit lower than
that. Well, all right. But in the end, what you want is Manchester United against Celtic or Arsenal against Rangers, whatever.
Yeah.
I remember when Sammy Nelson had a testimonial back in the late 70s, early 80s, whenever it was. And Celtic came down on a Tuesday night, pouring with rain. 7,000 fans turned up to watch a testimonial. We all want to see that sort of support against the big clubs in England. Mm. But this is a weird idea, especially when people are talking about scrapping the League Cup. And by the way, Andrew, what about the Scottish League Cup?
Yeah, I mean, the Scottish League Cup has been revamped in recent years into a group phase, which is played in the summer. The Scottish teams that are playing in European football don't compete in that round. They come into the competition later on. But
it's quite good,
if you look at that competition and you look at the likes of the EFL Trophy, where they brought in under-21 sides, and then the Scottish equivalent of that competition for lower league teams, the Challenge Cup, you have teams playing from Wales and Northern Ireland and the National League in England, the fifth tier of English football. Does that maybe suggest that cup competitions generally, people are not really there with it anymore? They don't have the appetite. If we're having to look at all these competitions, revitalise them, galvanise them in some kind of way, it perhaps suggests at a time when, as I said earlier, Guardiola and Klopp are complaining about having too many games.
Maybe some competitions now
are disposable.
Yes, I think that's true. Andrew, there's just one other thing. I know we're talking about the League Cup, north and south of the border, but the FA Cup is coming up to its 150th or some anniversary or other. And I was talking to a friend of mine who works with the FA, and they, you know, have got plans for a really special revamp of the tournament. Obviously, you know, they didn't go into detail with me, but I said what you should do is go back to the very first FA Cup and invite Scottish teams. I mean, people don't realise that the FA Cup was the first international tournament, in that the likes of Queen's Park and other Scottish clubs played against the best in England, who, and to be fair, they were up with the best in England in those days. That wouldn't be the case now. But it just might be a nice historical thing to invite some Scottish clubs to play in the FA Cup.
Andrew?
I'm bound to say that the response was a rather stony and uninterested stare. But Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a nice idea, I've got to say. As you mentioned, Queen's Park were back in the late 1800s, one of the leading teams in the United Kingdom.
Yep.
I think Rangers got to a semi-final as
they
well.
They did, and did Queen's Park as well.
Yeah, so, you know, you have teams have done it in the past, and it would be a nice throwback. I mean, I think the FA Cup and the Scottish Cup, they're slightly different from the two League Cups. I think people have more attachment to those competitions than they do the League Cup competitions. That's something that I would certainly welcome. I mean, don't get me wrong, the English League Cup, to bring Scottish teams in, certainly the Old Firm, I think that might be some kind of middle ground, because as I said earlier, I don't think we're ever going to see these teams in the Premier League, so it might be nice to have that. That might whet the appetite a bit more. You know, but as a long-term thing, I don't know if we could see anything like that happening and being sustainable and being something that people would remain interested in.
No. Now, I know also you get involved with Rangers as well. We were sat here last week, myself and Paddy, talking about the job that Steven Gerrard has done at Rangers. Mm. I mean, he's really... I mean, they are back, aren't they? Really?
Yeah.
And what's he done? What's he done down there? Because has he brought in a lot of new players, or has he just got them playing in a better style? I mean, what's he done?
Yeah, I mean, he's done a remarkable job, it has to be said, particularly for someone who's coming into their first job in management. There's big pressure. It doesn't matter what kind of player you are. It doesn't matter what you achieve as a player. Management is a pretty different game.
Yeah.
And we've seen people in the past who have been great players not succeed as managers. Gerrard has come in. He's learned from his mistakes, and he did make a few last season. The team was quite inconsistent. I think there were 9 draws and 6 defeats in the Scottish Premiership. So Rangers finished 9 points behind Celtic, and were well beaten. They collapsed in the second half of the season. Since then, he's worked on it. He's looked areas of the team that have needed improving, and has added quite well. I wouldn't be totally surprised if the transfer window closes next week with Rangers not making any additions to the squad, because I think he's quite happy now with what he has. You see the average goals that Rangers are scoring has gone up this season. The average goals conceded has gone down. They are winning more regularly. They are more consistent, and they have... He wanted to have a squad where he had 2 players for every position. He's by and large got that, and he's got great competition in there. What's great as well about the particularly the more forward players is he has a core of players there who are 22, 23, 24 years old, all hungry players who want to take that next step, which would be into the Premier League. And of course I'm talking about the likes of Alfredo Morelos, who's been so good up front. Ryan Kent has come in from Liverpool as well. They're an exciting team to watch, very, very attractive football. We saw that in the Old Firm game at the end of last month, which was actually a really good football match. And yeah, you're right, it's a title race, and it will go to the very end, I
think. Andrew, you know, spending a lot of time in Glasgow, as you no doubt do, do you get lots of study groups from England coming up and asking you, how do you arrange a 2-horse race in England? You just can't.
I knew where this was going, but yes, you're absolutely right.
I'll tell you one thing that has stood out, and talking to my colleagues at Sky Sports and talking to friends down here, one thing which Scottish football seems to be a little bit more relevant to people than it perhaps has been in previous years, and obviously that is because we have a 2-horse race again. But I think also what attracts people, and I mentioned the Old Firm game at the end of last month there, people enjoyed it partly because you didn't have VAR, you didn't have this stoppage every time something happened for 2, 3, 4 minutes at a time to check whether what we thought had happened. And as you know yourself, Paddy, Old Firm games are so frantic
Absolutely.
And so fast-paced.
It's part of the joy.
If ever there's a game where you do have VAR, that's one that it would be applied quite a lot. But people enjoyed it because it was old-school, proper football. So, yeah, there aren't study groups coming up to see how the 2-horse race thing goes, because we're quite new to it again ourselves after a few years of Celtic dominating.
Yep.
But certainly there are benefits to Scottish football. And I've got to be honest, VAR not being there at the moment, I think, is one of them.
Quite. Nice to speak to you, Andrew. Andrew Dixon there, freelance sports journalist and producer, working for Sky Sports News and Glasgow Rangers. Alfredo Morelos, right? I mean, he obviously is a finisher and he's a good striker.
Mm-hmm. He's a hard worker.
He might be the craziest person I've ever seen on a football field. He is certainly up there, isn't he?
I know.
He's been sent off, 5 times this season?
I know. People talk about players need a winter break. He gives himself a winter. He gives himself 4 breaks a year, at least.
That is true, actually.
He's potty. But one thing's for sure, you know, if he's on a field, your eyes are on him.
And
the opposition wind him up. And I mean, Scott Brown must think, oh, he's like a gift from God.
Well,
this
as soon as you said the opposition wind him up,
Scott Brown
was
the name. An image came to mind.
Was the name. If you put wind up in the dictionary, there's a big picture of Scott Brown's face.
Yes.
Just looking at you going, I'm going to go through the back of you at some point.
Fair point.
Yeah. Anyway, if you haven't seen a Celtic Rangers game with Scott Brown playing on it, it's... there's a word I can't use that worked perfectly encapsulates...
You will understand it when you watch the next World Old Firm game.
Quite. Ian Stone and Patrick Bartley here.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Man United, by the way, I know we've talked a lot about the state the club is in. They got fined £20,000 for failing to control their players and for failing to make sure their players conducted themselves in an orderly fashion. This is after Craig Pawson gave a goal for Liverpool against Manchester United. It was 1-0 at the time. The ball sort of just went up in the area. David De Gea went to catch it. And Virgil van Dijk went for the header. De Gea spilled it. It went around to a couple of players and was buried in the by Roberto Firmino. It was interesting on Sky Sports. I don't know if you watched it. It was an argument.
I was told that Keane and Souness had said it was a perfectly good goal.
Well, it was very interesting because Keane and Souness were saying it was a perfectly good goal. Patrice Evra, when at one point, one of them, I think it was Souness, was talking about that was a good goal. Patrice Evra then looked at Souness's drink, like, have you got alcohol in this? It was pretty funny, right? Because Evra was saying it wasn't a goal. I must admit, I fell down on the side of Souness and Keane. I think Souness made a very good point. What could could Virgil van Dijk have done differently? He didn't. He wasn't looking at the goalkeeper. He just tried to get his head on the ball. He's a big guy, and De Gea has been known to be a bit weak in that situation.
Yes, that's right.
The ball was recycled. Pawson didn't give it correctly, in my opinion.
Okay.
But VAR overruled it.
Yeah.
United players, well, we've got a picture of them on screen. I'm looking at, they're all shouting at him. It sort of reminded me a little bit of Roy Keane and the rest of them chasing Andy Durso down about 15, 20 years ago.
Absolutely, that's right.
And it didn't look great.
No.
But I thought David De Gea didn't really have a case in this.
Yeah, I would disagree with you. I think
you
that,
thought it was a foul?
Yeah. I think that if Virgil van Dijk had challenged Lindelof for that ball, it wouldn't have been a foul. It would have been a challenge because he would have had a reasonable chance of winning the ball. Given that De Gea has arms and is in, and as most people who follow football realize that goalkeepers use their arms, and given where the ball was, he'd no chance of getting it.
Well, I don't think his head was that far away.
De Gea then holds the ball. He's then criticized by all these geniuses who used to play the game for not cleaning out Virgil van Dijk by putting his knee through him. That's what Gary Neville said.
Yeah.
Now, of course, if he'd done that and given away a penalty, Gary Neville would be the first one to say it was reckless and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, there's an awful lot of rubbish talk. The point is that De Gea, quite rightly, did not commit a foul in his own penalty area.
No.
He was then jostled by Virgil van Dijk's, not aggressive, but not genuine attempt to win the ball, because you can't genuinely win a ball that is 3 feet above your head. It can't be a genuine challenge. It can't be. All it can be is a perfectly reasonable attempt to unsettle the goalkeeper, which is what Liverpool... Well, Liverpool will have gone into the game saying, if we do get a chance to ruffle De Gea in the air. That's been the case ever since he came to England.
Because we know that
Take it. But also, you must be prepared. If you do that through means of a foul, all you're doing... I mean, it wasn't a genuine attempt to get the ball. It was a genuine attempt to ruffle De Gea. And to that extent, it worked. But it was a foul. And the referee gave it.
Yeah.
The referee gave it, I beg your pardon, after mature reflection. Why didn't give it at the time? You understand, Roy Keane understands, and Graham Souness understands. But for me, it's a foul all day long. Simple as that.
I mean, this is, I guess, the beauty of the game, because I absolutely disagree with you.
I discussed this on Twitter this week, and it was 50-50. I mean... a lot of people agreed with you, and for the same reasons as you're putting forward.
Yeah,
but
they're clever people. Those people, they know what they're on about.
Yeah, well,
people.
I thought that others were even cleverer.
Well, I guess the point that Souness was making, and Roy Keane, was that if you're basically saying you cannot touch the goalkeeper, because, by the way, Virgil van Dijk, if anyone is going to be able to get up and head that ball, it is Virgil van Dijk. Also, by the way, I would say, Also, by the way, I would say that David De Gea's arms were not extended upwards. They were extended at about 45 degrees to take the ball, which means
that is true.
It
so
wasn't as high.
The 3 feet that I was talking about was more like 18 inches, I accept.
And if he jumps, if he times his jump well, let's be fair, I've seen Lucas Moura win headers he should never win when he if he times that jump correctly. What I saw was Virgil van Dijk not in any way looking at the goalkeeper, just trying to get his head on the ball.
Do you think Peter Shilton was soft in 1986 with Diego Maradona? Should he not have left himself open to the hand of God?
Shilton should have cleaned him out. He should have cleaned him out.
Now, had he done so, had the referee seen that, Shilton would have been sent off.
No. It's, honestly, Paddy, he should have cleaned him out. And it's not that I've not forgiven him for it, although I haven't forgiven him for it, but I just think there was no way that Maradona, all 5 foot five of him, even with his arm extended, and it wasn't extended that high, should have got above Peter Shilton. And Shilton should have taken him and the ball, and the referee wouldn't have given it because Shilton would have come up with the ball. And things would have been very, very different if that would have happened. By the way, have you seen the film, Maradona? Have you seen the film?
No, it's my ambition.
Oh, my God, what a great movie it is. It starts, I know we're getting off the subject here, but it doesn't matter. It starts with essentially a car chase through Naples, and there's one car where they're filming it from, and the car in front contains Diego Maradona and a couple of people in his entourage, and they go through the city streets, and it's Italian city streets in 1986, so there's minimal road safety as far as I can tell, and they pull up at the stadium. And there's 80,000 people there in the, whatever the Napoli stadium is, waiting, not a game, just waiting to greet Diego Maradona.
I saw his first match for Naples.
Did you?
Against, Souness was playing. Souness and Trevor Francis were playing for Sampdoria.
Yeah. Cominoli, is it the Cominoli?
Or
is
that Napoli?
Sao Paulo. And the film is an epic, really. It's almost operatic, and it starts with Maradona joining Naples and how amazing that was. And it ends in 1994, essentially, with Maradona on the pitch having told the Italian fans they should be supporting Argentina in their game against Italy, and the entire crowd booing Maradona, and Maradona swearing at them, going, I'll show you, and beating Italy in the semi-final.
Well, he beat the Italian system. I was going to say single-handed, but let me just go back. Let me go back to that. Let me go back to that foul, because there's one other thing that I'd like to tell you. There was a tweet. This whole argument about the Virgil van Dijk, David De Gea situation was started by a tweet by, you know, Rafa Honigstein,
of course, yeah,
outstanding journalist from Germany but working here.
Yeah,
and he said, quite calmly, he said, nothing. Nothing like this has illustrated the difference between English football and the rest of the world. He says, in the rest of the world, 99% of the time, that's a foul all day long. Here, there's a big debate about it.
Yeah.
Because English football is based on fighting. It's based on the physical challenge.
Do goalkeepers get too much protection?
Not in my opinion. I prefer the level of perfection they're given now to the level of protection they were given when they were getting serious injuries all the time.
In the 1958 Cup final, whatever it was, when the Man United goalkeeper ended up getting getting barged into the net.
You loved that, didn't you?
Well, I know not that I loved it. No, one, I wasn't born, actually. But I did.
You must have seen the video.
I have seen it plenty of times. And obviously, we don't want to go back to those days. But I think David De Gea is a bit vulnerable under the high ball. I genuinely do.
Always has been.
And I don't see why people can't challenge him. And it is a contact
sport.
They
can challenge him. Yeah, but you commit three fouls challenging him and maybe he'll drop the next ball. That's what it's all about. That's what it's got to do with football. Not allowing the fouls. You commit the fouls and you don't agree with me that it was a foul, so that's okay. But for me, it was a foul. It was a deliberate foul. It was a shake him up a bit. Because sooner or later, he's going to drop one.
It's not that I don't agree, although I don't agree. It's more that I'm disappointed. Really.
In me? Or the referee?
I, for one time, I watched the referee and I thought, yeah, good on you for not giving it. But I understand why it was given. Right. And anyway, it didn't matter because Liverpool won the game
Liverpool
anyway.
Liverpool won 2-0. But does this Did you introduce this partly because of Manchester United's reaction to that?
Well, it was the story was they got fined £20,000 for failing to control their players. Yeah. And what I wasn't impressed with at all was the seven or eight of them who surrounded referee, because it took me back to that time when Roy Keane, with a vein showing in his neck, and
that's the Andy
Dersel.
Against Middlesbrough.
And
no, you're quite right. I'll tell you what, Stoney, you and I are in complete agreement on this one. And what did they get fined? 20 grand.
20 grand, which is nothing, by the way.
Heavens, that's not even Slimani's toenail.
No, they can find it in their back pocket. I mean, you got 20 grand? Yeah, I think I got some loose change knocking about in the back of the sofa. I know. I mean, listen, they're just trying to say, please don't do that, because it doesn't set a good example.
It's
and I don't think it does, because I've watched loads of kids' football. And you know what? The kids are not doing that. And if they are, or if the parents are getting involved in doing that,
I do think referees have got too chummy. Oh, we're players. You know, the lads can put their hands on our shoulder. Yeah. And unfortunately, it just goes, it's getting out of control. And eventually somebody's going to push someone and everybody's going to say it's awful. Basically, there's a rule which is the captain can talk. In fact, the commentator, while I was watching, the commentator said, oh, David De Gea's the captain. And because he was talking to what was the referee's name again?
Craig Pawson,
that's right. No, look, they've got to be a little, and I know they're trying not to be as austere as old-fashioned referees, but there's got to be an absolute no touching and no breathing in my face, no... Nothing like that.
Yeah. Too much aggression.
Too much aggression.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.